to me, you need your best lineup caller. So if I was picking a team, I would 100% have Ian Henderson. I think he's the best lineup caller there.
For the best Lions coverage this summer, subscribe to the OTB Rugby podcast stream on the OTB Sports app.
The Olympic Show on OTB Sports with Indeed, proud partner of Team Ireland.
Good evening. This is the Olympic Show on Off the Ball. Neil Tracy bringing you your latest installment of the games, which is coming to you every day on OTB Sports app and across all the OTB platforms. It's all with thanks to Indeed, who are proud to support Team Ireland at the Tokyo 2020 Olympic Games. Indeed believes the world works better when people are given every opportunity to unleash their true talents. The hashtag to follow is hashtag talent unleashed. Now, it's been a difficult couple of days for Team Ireland, but 4:35 a.m. Irish time, Kelly Harrington will be going in the quarterfinal of the lightweight division of boxing. Imane Khelif of Algeria is her opponent. A win for Kelly Harrington, and she secures Ireland's fourth medal of the Games and second in the boxing ring. Joining me to talk more about it and about the disappointment for Kurt Walker and Aidan Walsh yesterday. Delighted to say professional middleweight and former world amateur silver medalist Jason Quigley is with us. Jason, how are you?
Great, how's things?
Not too bad at all, not too bad. Before we get on to Kelly Harrington and what's coming up in the early hours of tomorrow morning, I might start with yesterday's action and unfortunately lack of action for Aidan Walsh, because he had to pull out with the ankle injury he picked up celebrating his quarterfinal win on Friday morning. He was due to fight Pat McCormack in the semi-finals of the welterweight division yesterday, but unfortunately had to pull out with that ankle injury. He'll still come away with a bronze medal, but Jason, just heartbreaking for him to miss out on that opportunity to try make it one better and go for silver or go for gold.
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, I think any injury is disappointing. This one is like, it's just a bit of a freak injury because of the way that it happened. And, you know, I hope that he doesn't go away and, you know, question himself and kick himself because of his celebration. Like, the man went and won an Olympic medal. It's a massive achievement for any boxer to achieve. And, you know, sometimes you can't control your emotions whenever your hand's raised like that, whether it's for an Olympic medal, European medal, an Irish medal, whatever it is. You know, because of the difficult times that they went through just to get to the Olympic Games and then to go there and achieve getting a medal, his emotions definitely took over. I hope he doesn't kick himself for that, because, you know, I remember when Michael Conlon won a medal at the Olympic Games, there's a great picture of him in midair, just like Aidan Walsh done. He didn't go over on his ankle, but, you know, he went on and done great things as well. So I hope he doesn't kick himself for it. Of course, it's going to be disappointing because he has achieved so much. And whenever he goes back and sits down and thinks about this, he's going to just probably be like, look, I did brilliant. I did great. But there's always going to be that little bit. But if I hadn't have did this, but time heals all. And I think he'll come to terms with it at some stage and just understand that it just wasn't meant to be.
Yeah, look, I think you make a good point there that, like, it's human nature. It's a human reaction to the moment of winning an Olympic medal. Like, the tiny fraction of people who have lived on this earth who've gone on and won an Olympic medal. Like, I don't think any one of us can sit here and look at Aidan Walsh and say, do you know what, you should maybe have been a little bit more composed when you found out you'd won an Olympic medal.
I think it's all down to the personality of the person as well. You know, you get a lot of people that are very laid back, very chilled out, very relaxed, and you get a lot of people that are emotional and an excitement type of a person. And I personally don't know Aidan, but, you know, even a quiet, relaxed, chilled out person won the Olympic medal, it can react like that as well. It's totally human nature. And the way that he has to look at it is just, he didn't do anything wrong. Like, you know, it was just a freak accident. It was a very happy, proud moment. And it just wasn't meant to be for him. And I think that's kind of the mindset that he has to take away. Look at the achievement. Of course he's going to be disappointed. Of course he's going to be, what if? But if I did this, if I didn't do that? You know, these wee things are going to come into his head, of course. But it's an unbelievable achievement. At the end of the day, look, it just wasn't meant to happen for him. It wasn't meant to be. But he can definitely come away from the Olympics
one proud man of getting Ireland's first medal in boxing and getting the ball rolling and getting that excitement going for Kelly as well in her next fight.
Yeah, it certainly is. And look, he gave us a huge amount of enjoyment and a huge amount of excitement over his few fights. And I can only imagine the ankle must have been pretty bad, because, like, I'd imagine he would have been wanting to push through as much pain as he could possibly tolerate to get through that semi-final.
Of course. Like, I heard the rumours speculating first that he went over on his ankle and his victory jump, and that he could possibly be withdrawn from the tournament. So my initial reaction was like, no, he'll not withdraw. Like, it's the Olympic Games. It doesn't matter if he's going with one leg. But obviously, it must be a very serious injury. Maybe he cracked something and it's just, you know, can't withstand any pressure on it whatsoever. And the way that Aiden boxes, he's moving and running around the ring constantly. I don't know how he had the energy to make that jump at the end of that at the end of that fight. So for Aiden as well, the ankle was I'm going to say the ankle is it's very important for him, but of course it's important for him. But the type of boxer that he is, he's a very much a mover, uses his footwork very, very well in a fight. And look, obviously, it's a very serious injury, and you know the team that he has around him, I'm sure, have made the right call and withdrawn him from the tournament.
Yeah, no, like it's exactly what you said there. Because even as like a complete armchair boxing fan that I would be, I would have been able to see last Friday morning that the movement he had around the ring, he was just going from left to right. His opponent really could not lay a glove on him at all throughout that fight, and it was, you know, a huge part of his game.
Of course, and Pat McCormick was to be his opponent now in the next fight, and Pat has beat him in previous fights before, but deep down I think Pat's going to be a little bit relieved that Aiden has withdrawn as well, because Aiden's a very tricky competitor. He's a very tricky fighter to come up against. Even if you have beat him in previous fights, or if you've got the better of him before in fights, he just has that style that it's just hard to deal with. It's hard to figure out, and it's hard to come up against. So Pat McCormick might be just a little bit happy with a lot of people will be saying, of course, Pat would love to fight and get into the final, but you know, he's got his bypass into the final now and doesn't have to come across the tricky great fighter that Aiden Walsh is. So he could be rubbing his hands together, very, very relieved of that also.
The one silver lining for Aiden as well, I suppose, on top of actually coming away with the medal, but it's the fact that he doesn't have 4 years to sit on the regrets or sit on the disappointment. He only has three. And as his sister Michaela pointed out, she was on the show with us on Friday as well, that he's only been in the high performance setup for a couple of years. Like, there's, on paper at the very least, it looks like there's a lot more to come from him.
Without a doubt, he's a top-class fighter. And with this achievement that he's got now in the Olympic Games, you could see Aiden Walsh really propel now himself further up the ladder, start doing things that he hasn't done before. And this is all confidence. This is the confidence that he's going to be getting and that he has built through the Olympic Games, through the qualifiers to the Olympics, and then going on and winning the medal. You know, you could see Aiden Walsh now being one of those names now in Irish boxing that everyone knows and everyone that's looking out for at European Championships, World Championships, and watching his progress right through to the next Olympic Games as well.
Yeah, it certainly is. And that was just the first of two blows for Irish boxing on the night. I hadn't actually realised it at the time. I'll tell you now, I had decided I was going to take an early night because I was going to get up and watch Aiden and watch Kurt Walker as well. And I think the Aiden Walsh news came in at about 11 or half past 11. I'd just gone to bed slightly before that. So I got up, I watched Kurt Walker's fight, all disappointed. And then I was saying, OK, look, at least we've Aiden Walsh coming up now in a few minutes. And then it was someone on RT, I think, just kind of casually referenced Aiden Walsh having to pull out with the ankle injury. And I was going, oh, you're joking me. So it was the double blow for Irish boxing. Unfortunately, Kurt Walker beaten by Duke Reagan of the USA. It was a split decision, 3-2 in the end. Fair call, Jason?
Look, whenever you get to that level and, you know, you get two fighters that are at world class, you know, elite operators, and, you know, they come up against it, they give it their absolute all. Personally, and in my opinion, I thought Kurt did enough to win that fight. The first round obviously went against him, but I thought the second and third round, Kurt did enough to take the victory. And I thought he put in a great performance, performed really, really well in that fight. Really pulled it back after the first round, you know, knew that he didn't get off to the start that he wanted and really pushed on and upped his game. And I thought that he did deserve the victory. It's going to be very disappointing for him. At the time, now, this is going to be a real kick in the teeth for him, because getting so close to becoming an Olympic medalist and being beat by that little small fraction is can be very hard to take. But I think when Kurt comes away and looks at his achievement, looks at what he has achieved over the last number of weeks leading into the Olympic Games and the Olympic Games themselves, he's going to be very proud of himself. Kurt is another fighter that Irish amateur boxing has that can really make himself a household name in Irish amateur boxing if he hangs around long enough to do that. Which we don't know yet. We haven't really heard. Is he going to hang around in the amateur game? Is he going to call it a day and move into the professional ranks? But I think Kurt is a real top-class quality operator and can really go on to do amazing things in amateur boxing. And with the next Olympics only being 3 years away, I think it's something that he should consider.
That's interesting. How tough did you find that decision when it came around for you?
It was very tough. You know, going won a European gold medal, a couple of months later, getting to the world final and, you know, falling short, coming away with a silver medal. Before, I spoke about this recently to someone, and they asked me, that's an unbelievable achievement. And yes, before the tournament, if you decide you're going to get to the final, you're going to come away with a silver medal, I've been like, unbelievable, take that every day of the week. But there's still just something that sits there with you that, you know, you were 9 minutes away from becoming a world champion. And I believe things happen for reasons. I believe now that I'm going to get my opportunity in the professional game. And if I ever get 9 minutes to becoming a world champion again, I'm not going to let it slip. So for me, turning over professional, it was something that I had to take it annoyed my head, to be honest, because everything was going on outside the ring. I wanted to be in the gym. I wanted to be fighting. I wanted to be competing. This was strange for me, you know, because I was kind of in limbo, whether I was going to stay amateur, whether I was going to turn over professional. And I just wasn't doing what I wanted to do. But at the end of the day, the reason and the purpose that I turned professional was I watched Marco Antonio Barrera win a world title whenever I was a kid, and that was the reason I turned professional, or that was the reason why I got into boxing in the first place. And my dream and goal is always to become a professional world champion. So that was basically it. Like, that was what it all came down to. I hadn't a clue what to do, what decision to make, but when it all came down to it, I kind of look back to when I was a kid and why I started this sport and why I got into it. And, you know, that's what put me over the edge then and made me make my mind up of turning professional. But it's a very, very hard decision. And I feel for these fighters now that have gotten so far in the amateur game, that Kurt was so close to becoming an Olympic medalist. Is he going to hold off and maybe wait to the next one to try and become an Olympic medalist? Or is he just going to go on ahead and be like, right, I've had enough of this amateur game, let's get into the professional game? It's a very tough decision.
It is, yeah. I'll come back to Kurt Walker's actual fight. Just another question on, like, your own journey and your own decision of turning professional back in 2013. Was it one you sat on for a long time thinking about, or was it a fairly short process of thinking about it and, like, a gut feeling, I'm going for it?
Yeah, it was...
it was a long process, you know. As I say, like, there was a lot of back and forth with different promoters, different management teams, with Irish High Performance, Billy Walsh, and it was a difficult one. It really, really was, because I had really cemented my place on the national team, because for years I was fighting, you know, to become number one, and I was fighting to get into that that key position on the national team. And that year in 2013, you know, I cemented my place as number one. And, you know, I was a massive hope to go on and become an Olympic medalist in Rio. And yeah, it was difficult. It really, really was. You know, there was a lot of back and forth chats with people, a lot of sleepless nights, a lot of things doing as well, you know, trying to take my mind off it, because my head was just being deep. Like, I was like, what do I do here? Because I really would have loved to have gone to the Olympic Games, but I knew that I was in a great position to turn professional after what I had already achieved. And I looked at it and I came down, you know, I went to the European Championships, I won a gold medal, I went to the Worlds and I won a silver medal. I represented Ireland on numerous multi-nation tournaments and came away with plenty of gold medals. And I felt as if I wore the vest and represented it well and proudly. And I thought, you know, I'll just give it a rattle now, you know, I'll go professional. This is the main reason why I started this game. And that was literally one night I couldn't make up my mind, and things, I needed to get back in the ring, I needed to get back training. And that was the question I asked myself, you know. I just sat down one night, peace, quiet, and I just says, what do you want to do, Jason? Like, and just went back to that time when I was a young kid watching that fight, and I got goosebumps for the first time in my life as well watching it. And I was like, this is what I'm going to do. And I made the decision. And of course, going to Los Angeles and signing with Golden Boy was very appealing. You know what I mean? It was going from Donegal to Hollywood. It pushed me a little bit as well. Like. But it was a very difficult decision. And, you know, I feel for a lot of the fighters now as well, that it's an unbelievable position to be in, to have the opportunity and to have the people wanting you to turn over professional. But also, you know, I know Kurt as well. Like, Kurt was just being brought into the team whenever I was peaking in the Irish team as well. And he's a lovely fellow, Kurt. And, you know, got on really, really well with them and loved watching his progress through the years as well. And, you know, I think that he's at that stage where he can really, you know, really go on and do some special things in amateur boxing. And just the professional game has such an appeal with the big shows and the bright lights and, you know, all these different things that the media hypes it up to be. But look, at the end of the day, they just have to sit down and ask themselves that question as well. Why did you get into the sport, and what's going to make you most happy? Because what you're most happy at and what you're most enjoying the best, that's what you're going to succeed at. Of course, he might not know exactly what the professional game is all about and how he's going to feel about it. It's definitely going to be an unknown territory for him. But you really have to sit down and ask yourself some serious questions now. So good luck to them all.
Yeah, I'm sure it's an incredibly tough decision. Before I move on to Kelly Harrington, I do want to just bring up someone you mentioned as part of like your decision process and the people you spoke to. And someone I saw you even tweeting about there just before you came on with us, Billy Walsh. Like, he spoke about how tough it was having to see Kurt Walker lose that, you know, Billy Walsh masterminding the victory for Duke Reagan, because Billy was the man. He says that he was the one that brought Kirk into the high performance setup, and as you said in your tweet, one of the best in the business.
Without a doubt, you know, I think Billy was getting a little bit emotional in that interview that he done as well, and I felt it. You know, I could feel Billy's unbelievable. The heart and the passion that he has for the sport of boxing, for Team Ireland, like his country, is something else. And, you know, through the years, Billy has really, you know, he brought me into the team at a very young age as well, and really helped me grow and, you know, helped me progress in my amateur career. And Billy has a real connection with the fighter. He can really make things hit home for you, and he can really get that extra couple of percent out of you that not everyone can do. And, you know, Billy's he's a very special coach. He's a very special trainer. He reminds me a lot of, you know, Alex Ferguson in his way. Like, he seems to just have that something special about him. And, you know, I can't thank Billy enough for what he's done for me through the years. And I think he's, you could see in that interview, you know, how much he misses Ireland. Like, how much he would love to be representing Ireland. Like, you know what I mean? Winning medals for his country. And, you know, you can see that, that void in him. And, you know, I've seen some of the hard times that he's had and some of the talks that he's had with us as a team, of the difficult situations that he had to go through. And, you know, he's just, he's an incredible person. And, you know, it's great to see him doing amazing things now with the Team USA as well. Because, like, USA were down and out for a couple of years there. A couple of Olympic Games were one of the best boxing teams were just being looked over and not achieving what they should be achieving. And, you know, Billy has really brought that spark back to him, and I'm not surprised, but he's really brought that spark back to them now, and it's great to see him doing so well with them.
Yeah, he's shown it was no fluke what he did in Ireland, not that anyone was thinking it was. Before we finish up, just want to spend a couple of minutes talking about Kelly Harrington, obviously, because 4:35 a.m. Irish time on this coming Tuesday morning, quarterfinal of the lightweight division. Jason, along with like Paul O'Donovan and Fintan McCarthy in the rowing, Kelly was, from an Irish point of view, she wasn't like just a medal hope. She was one of those medals that I think a lot of people have been expecting. So there's a lot of pressure on her. Now, I know she's ranked number one for a reason at the same time.
Yeah, like, you know, she has that weight to carry now, as she's very popular. She's kind of like the poster girl now for Irish women's boxing, and she's carrying it very well. You know, she's handling herself very well. She's been very responsible, very respectful, you know, and carrying that banner. And she's proven it in the ring also. You know, she is a special talent, inside and outside the ring. She's doing great things. And yes, taking away the expectation everyone in Ireland has off her now of being a medal hope at the Olympics for us. It doesn't matter what tournament you're in, coming to that quarterfinal stage and being one fight away from medaling, doesn't matter if it's a multi-nations, a Europeans, or a World's Olympic Games. These are the moments now that, you know, you want to take something home. And there's going to be that bit of pressure on as well, because, you know, one fight and you're a medalist. I believe that she's got off the ground running very, very well. She's had a great performance. It's a good confidence booster. It's a good stepping stone into the tournament now for her. And she's coming up against an Algerian Khalif. She is not very well known, not very well heard of. Kelly is expected to go on there, be victorious, and become an Olympic medalist. But she carries that very well, and she deals with that type of pressure very well. And I can see Kelly going into this fight now and putting in another great performance. And once she clinks now this fight, puts in a good performance, gets herself into that semi-final and into a guaranteed medal position, you're going to see something very special out of Kelly Harrington, I think.
Yeah, let's hope so. Anyway, I thought there was a really interesting quote from her after her opening fight last week. She was asked about the pressure of, because she's had to do a lot of sitting around in Japan. Like, this is just going to be her second fight. We're talking day 11 of the games. There have been some fighters who've had 3-4 fights and are already finished. But she said, there's no point staying focused all the time. I started focusing today on the fight. I'm fit and I'm sharp, and I have the coaches there and my own club, Noel Burke, at home as well, keeping me focused. I probably hadn't really thought so much. I would have had it in my head that, you know, an athlete sitting in the Olympic Village, they're tuned in nonstop all day waiting for the moment. But kind of with Kelly, she's talking about how she's able to just kind of go about her business for a couple of days, and when the time arrives, she's into fight mode again.
That is the key. You can see fighters get very fatigued. Athletes get very fatigued throughout the games and throughout a tournament. And the hardest part is switching off, because you're around that environment all the time. You're around that environment of people competing, making weight, ups, downs, people running around with a gold medal, people missing out on a gold medal. And you have to switch yourself off from that, and you have to, you know, exactly what Kelly is doing. And I'm so happy to hear that, because it just shows what great mindset that she's in and how confident that she is. Because if you're not very confident in yourself, you're going to be switching on thinking, how am I going to beat this girl? What am I going to do? How am I going to get there? This is for a medal. But Kelly knows the ability that she has. She knows the potential that she can reach. And she's very, very confident in herself. I can tell by that quote, because she's sitting back, she's relaxing, she's not thinking too much about it. She knows she's got a job. She's got to get in there, take care of business. But for now, let's relax. There's no point in me getting hyped up now and, you know, wasting emotional energy, mental energy, and fatiguing yourself. Kelly is in she's in a very great mindset, obviously in a great physically position as well, and really looking forward to her fight now. I think it's going to be a great lift for Ireland if she can get in there and do the job.
Yeah, and hopefully another medal to the count for Ireland as well. Jason Quigley, pleasure as always speaking to you. Thanks for joining us.
Lovely stuff. Thank you.
Jason Quigley there speaking to the OTB Olympics show ahead of Kelly Harrington's fight. 4:35 a.m. tomorrow morning. She goes in the quarterfinal of the lightweight division against Imana Khalif of Algeria. So waiting to speak to us on the line is Cliona Foley. Before we bring in Cliona, I'll just give you a roundup of everything that happened with Team Ireland today at the Olympic Games in Tokyo. So we'll start in equestrian. Austin O'Connor and Colorado Blue secured a top 15 finish in the individual event final. They secured a 13th place overall in Tokyo. They picked up 4 faults in the final. In the team event, O'Connor, Sarah Ennis and Sam Watson finished 8th of the 15 finalists. On the athletics track, a time of 23.21 seconds wasn't enough for Phil Healy to progress to the semi-finals of the women's 200 metres. She was 5th in her heat, but that time of 23.21 seconds was a season's best time for her. Two other Irish athletes missed out on a place in the women's 1500 metre semi-finals. Ciara McGeehan and Sarah Healy both failed to progress beyond their heats. McGeehan did reveal after the race, though, she'd been carrying a calf injury in the lead-up to the Games and hadn't been training for up to a week prior to the last couple of days. And also, unfortunately, Oliver Dingley's interest in the men's 3,000-metre springboard is over. Having qualified for the final in Rio 5 years ago, Dingley was 25th in the preliminary round today, and only the top 18 would have been advancing to the semi-finals. Now, as I said a couple of moments ago, Cliona Foley of Off the Bench and a regular contributor on Off the Ball is with us this afternoon to recap some of the bigger stories over the last couple of days. Cliona, how are you this evening?
Good, Neil. How's the sleep deprivation going?
Oh, it's been tough. I won't lie, Cliona, it's been tough. I hadn't planned last night to get up and actually watch anything, and I just naturally woke up at 2:30 in the morning, and it was another half an hour before I was back asleep again. It's been tough. I don't know how long it's going to take to get back to normal as well then.
But that's what happens as well with the Olympics, is you get up or you stay up to watch one thing and then you end up watching something else, you know. And even like the golf on Sunday, I just couldn't believe how engrossed I got in it, you know. And it's amazing how you'll end up watching a random volleyball match or a basketball match, and suddenly, you know, you can't leave it.
Well, on that, I will point out one thing I've been looking forward to seeing, and I believe it's starting tomorrow, is the sports climbing. Have you ever seen this?
No, I mean, I've
only seen
videos of it.
Basically, rock climbing. It is brilliant. I remember it was a couple of years ago. We were all sitting out in the office, and it was like the youth or junior Olympics were on Eurosport, and we were watching. They were debuting this ahead of it coming into the actual 2020 Tokyo Games. It's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. It's like watching gladiators, except they're giving out Olympic medals at the end of it.
It is. And actually, there's a very good Irish climber, an ice climber, a woman called Emer McSwiggan from Tyrone, who a couple of years ago was looking at thinking about would she qualify. She lives out in Korea. And if you follow her on social media and you have a look at some of the stuff she does, it's amazing. But I remember interviewing her, she was saying this is completely different type of climbing because it's all about speed as well. And it is, as you said, gladiators is simply, but there's two or three different kinds of it. Mm. And the strength of these men and women, particularly in their hands and their arms, it's phenomenal. So again, yeah, that's going to be something we're all experts in about 2 days' time.
Yeah, so anyone watching or listening at home, I'd absolutely encourage you over the next couple of days to try dig out some footage of this. Well worth watching. I'll come back to Team Ireland though over the last day or so, Cliona, because it's probably after the highs of maybe Wednesday, Thursday, Friday last week, we were all expecting a big Sunday as well where we had a lot of people in medal contention, and for one reason or another things didn't really work out. And then this morning it was probably just another bit of a disappointing day. We had Ciara McGeehan and Sarah Healy in the heats of the 1500 metres, and you know, as we found out with Ciara afterwards, having to carry an injury over the course of the last week, hampering your chances of kind of being able to prepare properly for the race. It's just a hugely disappointing moment for her, considering how long she's been building up to these games.
But you see, that's what I always say about the Olympics, Neil, is like you have to be right on this day once every, or 2 days, once every 4 years, or in this case, once every 5 years, you know, and you see superstars from all over the world who got injured and couldn't make it. And obviously, given everything she said afterwards, you know, they must have tried very, very hard. She tore her calf in her last pre-games training session. So it looks like the medics and the physios worked really hard on her to get there. And you could see it last night, like she was in a brilliant position. Everything she did was right, except when they kicked to 300, she couldn't go with them. And in the last 2 years, we've seen Ciara has a great finish. So it was clear there was something wrong. What I liked was her attitude afterwards. Like she was angry, you know, she was upset and she was angry, not in a I'm not good enough, but in a kind of I should be there. And this is just really, really annoying. And I think, you know, the fact that the next Olympics are 3 years away, that's great. But I was also really impressed with Sarah Healy. Mm. You know, she's only 20. You know, she's been a European champion at Youth Olympics and junior level. But I was really amazed by her afterwards, because what really impressed me about her is like she was in this, you know, these women's 1500 heats are ridiculously hot and ridiculously crowded as well. They should have had an extra one in because it was the bodies were everywhere. But she was brilliant because, you know, it was like the attitude was you put to her, you know, oh, look, at you've loads of time, you're only 20. And she came straight back and said, I might never be here again. You know, this might have been my shot. And I think that's really, really impressive to hear athletes with that attitude, you know, saying it doesn't matter really what age I am. If I got here, I'm good enough and I should be making the most of it. But she is, in fact, young enough and she still has a lot of strength. And 1500 is a strength race, you know. So I think we're going to see a lot more of her in future. She's a really, really impressive young athlete, physically and mentally.
Yeah, I think she's probably a good example of, I think it might have been in one of the early Olympic shows we did, and I think it might have actually been yourself talking to Richie about it, how for a lot of Team Ireland, this is like the Olympic Games before the real Olympic Games.
Yeah. And particularly because Paris is only 3 years away as well. Yeah. Do you know, I think that'll really keep them sharp, if you like. You know, 4 years seems an awful long time away. And I know talking to Tom Barr earlier, and, you know, when you look at Tom Barr, that's like that, there's where the luck and the bad luck can hit you. If Tom had run in the last heat, he was in the final. He ran the seventh fastest time, but he didn't make the top eight final just because of the heat that he was in. You know, he didn't make the fastest loser then because he wasn't in the top two. And that's the way it goes. But I remember talking to Tom earlier this year and saying, you know, would you hang on for Paris, especially after the frustrations of the last 2 years, really? And he said, actually, because it's only 3 years away, I'll definitely think about it. Whereas if it was 4 years, I probably would be writing it off. So it is interesting. I think that it could motivate the younger ones, but also maybe the older ones who still feel I could still be in there with the shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really, really interesting. On staying on the 1500 briefly, obviously we had the bizarre scenes in one of the heats with Sifan Hassan taking the fall. On the final lap, managing to get up and not just qualify, but actually win it.
Ran down the entire field and won it, exactly. Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And to be honest, looked like she might even have been pulling up ever so slightly as they got towards the finish line.
Yeah, she jogged in. She did. She pretty much jogged in. And she didn't just have a trip. She had a serious fall as well. She got a right clatter. So if it's any consolation to people looking at that and thinking, oh my goodness, how did she do that? 10 hours later, last night, she went ahead, I think it was possibly, might have been 12, and won the 5,000 metre final. And did it in classic Hassan style. You know, she's of Ethiopian heritage, went to Holland as a refugee when she was about 15. And she has that very slight frame that the Ethiopians have, but with incredible power and endurance. And she sat at the back of the field. I mean, other athletes must hate to run against her. She sat at the back of the field for the 5,000. And then at the bell, she came up and she just burned the whole lot of them off. And she won again. She won by 2 or 3 seconds. But the most extraordinary thing about her is, she'll be back. She's looking to do a treble. It's never been done. And to think that you would win a 1500, a 5000, and a 10,000 is extraordinary. Now, at the World Championships in Doha in 2019, she did a bizarre double at the time that we found difficult to understand, which was the 1500 and the 10,000. Now she's looking to put a third one in here. And so, like, if she pulls it off, it would be extraordinary. You could argue the 1500 in some ways, because it's such a tactical race and because there'll be so many bodies in there and there's such a standard there, that actually might be the most difficult. But Dervla Roque had a great stat on her today. She said that to run all of these, she will run over 24,000 metres, I think, in this Olympics, which is a pretty amazing statistic. To compete over that distance is phenomenal. And we were saying, imagine if there was heats in the 10,000, which there isn't, even more. So what she's doing is remarkable. Some would argue unbelievable, but she's there and she has been there for a while. Since 2016, she has, you know, she always looks like an athlete who isn't, when I saw her when she was younger, she looked like an athlete who really wasn't even trying. She has a very laconic style and she's very light. But since 2016, her progress has been extraordinary. And if she tomorrow, there will be huge emphasis, even to see her doing a 5,015. But if she does a 5,015 and then goes for the 10, that would be extraordinary.
Phil Healy, then, she also missed out in the heats of the 200 metres. She ran 23.21, a season best. But as she pointed out afterwards, there's a large silver lining in so far as, you know, getting to the final in the 4x400 mixed relay. And she kind of spoke about how she has sacrificed her own individual events to a certain extent, which probably says a lot about her, to be honest.
I think so, Neil. And that is the reality, is that she has. Like, she ran the 400 and she's or the 4x4, and she's going to run in the 400 herself tomorrow. Mm. And that's even a big ask to do all of that. And I think that's the truth. The truth is she has sacrificed her own ambitions here, if you like, because those 4x4s, you know, they were really fast. And to make a final in that, to do that and to make history for Irish athletics was incredible. But Phil is still only 26, and I think she still has lots to do over the next few years. So she's herself and the two sprinters, Marcus Lawler and Leon Reid, are all in sprint heats in the early hours. And then Andrew Coskern as well is in tomorrow in the 1500. So I think he might be the first one in at about 1:30 in the morning. So we have interest in the athletics tomorrow again. And again, look, it's just about them, you know, but I think in sprint events, you're looking for PBs. In distance or middle distance, it's not easy to do PBs. You never know what's going to happen. It all depends on the pace of the race. And for example, in that 1500 meter final today, everybody played into Hassan's hands because they ran a slow race and then allowed her just to burn them off. So those middle distance races, even heats, are very tactical, but also they're very crowded. I mean, they're just ridiculous. There's 16 or 17 athletes in some of these 1500 meter heats. So Andrew is going to have to be careful tomorrow and just be awake and watch what's going on, because they've got every year they get more and more like bumper car races.
Yeah, I have the exact times here when they're going tomorrow for anyone interested at home. So Andrew Coskern, he's in the 1500 metres heat. He's in heat 3. That's 1:27 a.m. Irish time. Phil Healy then going in the 400 metres. Her heat is at 2:17 a.m. Marcus Lawler in the 200 metres, he's 3:45 a.m. And then Leon Reid is the last of the Irish on the track tomorrow. He's 3:53 a.m. in the 200 metre heats. I did also want to ask you, Cliona, about Oliver Dingley in the diving today. It was a disappointment for him. He finished 25th overall. Yeah. It was only top eight who were going to be advancing. And for someone who was a finalist 5 years ago in Rio, like, I imagine it was hugely disappointing. Even reading the quotes from him afterwards, it was just tough to hear him. Tough to hear him speak like that, saying, I felt a bit useless. It was really, really heartbreaking.
Oh, Lord, yeah. And you know what? I mean, Ollie never got the credit for what he did in Rio. To make the top eight, to be eighth in the world in Olympic final in the 3 metre springboard is extraordinary. Now, he grew up in England and he would have been familiar and around the same area and trained at the round time. There's a guy called Jack Lohr who's in who made it through today, would be from his club. And Tom Daly, Ollie would have trained with all of those. So he transferred to Ireland. He's got a mum from Cork. But I really felt for him today. Do you know what happened to him? Diving, all of these sports are very similar. Anything that has that, so it was very like Reese McLenahan. His second dive, his toes slipped right to the very edge of the board, and you don't get a proper spring when that happens. And so he got thrown forward and really had a very bad, it was a 3.5 pike forward pike. And that really, once that happens, your confidence goes. And I also think that actually the lockdown has affected people like him, because they haven't been able to get away and travel and do as much competitions as they usually do. And diving is one of those precision sports where confidence is everything. It was really, really heartbreaking for him, I'd say, because he works awfully hard. He trains out in the National Indoor Centre in Dublin. And, what he did in Rio really was extraordinary, and there was no pressure on him out there. And maybe as well the fact that, you know, there are expectations on him having done that now. But even his results since, he's had trouble, he's had injuries since then, and 5 years turns out to be a very long time, you know, in these precision sports.
Yeah, and as you said, like that second dive, even the scores, yeah, like you can see it just straight away. Like he got 40.3 for that second dive. The rest of the scores, he got 63, 59.5, 54, 57 and 61.2. So, look, that was the hugely important one. Before we leave you, Cliona, there are a couple other bits I do want to ask about. You said you wanted to talk a little bit about the hockey, because obviously Ireland missed out on a quarterfinals place after losing on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
But, like, as you've kind of pointed out, that the context behind it is that after today's quarterfinals, three of the four semi-finalists there in the women's hockey have come out of Ireland's group.
Well, the really interesting thing is that like Ireland had targeted to beat India and they lost to them, and everyone went, that's the game that cost you, right? That's the game that cost you quarterfinal. But India have gone on and they've beaten Australia, who were being hotly tipped during the tournament to win it, and were unbeaten in their group, and everyone was saying they were one of the hot tipsters. So India came out and beat Australia, beat them 1-0. And then GB ended up today in McFerrin time, as my niece's husband calls us. They went to shootout today with Spain and beat Spain in a shootout. Goalkeeper was fantastic. So you now have a repeat. In one semi-final, you have a repeat, GB versus Netherlands. And in the other one, you have India, which nobody expected, and who beat Ireland, against Argentina, who beat Germany. So it's really interesting to see that happen. And in fact, the Indian men have got through as well. They beat GB men 3-1. So the Indians must be going crazy for their hockey teams at the moment.
When it comes to the Irish women's hockey team, are they kind of hampered a little bit by the expectation they set around themselves in 2018, when they kind of probably overachieved getting to a World Cup final? And do maybe some of us kind of have them a little bit higher in our rankings than they probably actually are in reality, that they're kind of they exceeded so much in 2018, but in reality they are still working their way through those rankings?
Yeah, everybody knows that they overachieved incredibly well at that World Cup tournament to come home with silver medal, and that was phenomenal. I think they've had a few problems since they lost three key defenders. They lost the Bars and Zoe Wilson for this tournament. And Zoe Wilson was brilliant in that World Cup. So they lost some key defenders. They changed a coach. But I think also maybe the pressure, you know, the expectations on that weren't on them then. They played, as I said before, they played with a freedom in that tournament, in that World Cup, that I haven't seen them play with since. I also think they need to find one or two really brilliant strikers. I just don't think they have that at the moment. And I think our juniors and our underage teams apparently are really good coming through. So I think that's probably going to be a big ambition now, is to find, because you've got to be scoring the amount of, you've got to be scoring short corners. You know, you just have to be scoring them, and the percentage in short corners isn't enough. And that's, you know, that's one of the key parts of the game. So I think they're missing that star striker maybe, but you couldn't ever fault them for the work they've done, and also for the legacy they've created, because I think now we're going to see more and more talent coming through. And Sean Dancer's already brought through some of the younger talent too. So I think and never, ever, ever could you want for their effort or their training levels or anything like that. You know, they were looking at the women's semi-finals today were played in 30 degrees. At the night finals in the track, they got a downpour and everybody was delighted, even though it looked dangerous. But the heat out there is incredible.
Last thing I wanted to ask you, Cliona, and you mentioned golf right at the top of this conversation. I have been told you've got a suggestion for how the Olympic golf can be improved. Even though, as you said, you did love it yesterday, I really want to hear this. What is it?
Well, I think it should always have been from the start, it should be a mixed event.
Oh, okay.
And I think it should be mixed match play. Could you imagine what it would be like if you had the best men and best women in the world playing together in pairs, and you played in a match play format, which is essentially what we saw yesterday in the playoff, which was riveting. Wouldn't that be fantastic? Like, people, it would be totally unique to the Olympics. People would tune in just to see it. I just think that would, especially because the Olympic movement has you know, gotten now so many mixed events, you know, in swimming and in athletics, they brought them in. So I think,
and they've been a big hit. They've been a big hit in swimming and athletics as well. 100%.
They've been fantastic to watch, especially when in those ones you can match women against men and look at the difference. You know, actually in the swimming pool was fantastic.
And you kind of, and because when that happens, you kind of don't really know where you are until you're getting to those last legs of like a relay or something.
Yeah, and you can also see in some of the swimming events as well, and in the running ones, you could see the physical difference between the men and the women, you know, and the gaps they had to make up. But I think it would be brilliant in golf, you know, brilliant in golf. And look at how fascinating it would be if we got to see, you know, our best golfers, men and women, against America's best golfers, men and women, or Spain's best golfers. Like, wouldn't it be truly unique?
Yeah, it absolutely would. And I think even just in general, as you were kind of saying, the more of these mixed events, the better, because they have been hugely, hugely entertaining in the ones we've seen. Cliona, great as always. Thanks a million for joining us on the Olympic show.
You're very welcome. Thanks, Neil.
That was Cliona Foley on the OTB Olympic show, live at 5 o'clock every evening across the Olympic cycle over these couple of weeks. You'll get us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter and on the OTB Sports app. And all with thanks to Indeed, who are proud to support Team Ireland at the Olympic Games in Tokyo. Indeed believes the world works better when people are given every opportunity to unleash their true talents. And the hashtag to follow is Talent Unleashed.
The Olympic Show on OTB Sports with Indeed, proud partner of Team Ireland.